Hello and welcome to this blue Monday morning of version of Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Oberle from VikingsTerritory.com, ProPSD.com, and that's Mark Craig over there from the Star Tribune and the StarTribune.com. We're both dressed in our Honolulu blue this morning, but it's morning blue, you know, because the Detroit Lions lost this weekend, and we'll have plenty to say about that in a subsequent segment. But first, we wanted to talk about, well, it's all related to what we saw yesterday and where we're going. I mean, the Vikings offseason began in earnest a few weeks ago, and unfortunately can't do much just yet but speculate. But, you know, thing number one for the Vikings is what to do at quarterback. And Mark, you kind of texted me something about quarterbacks and taking a look at what one of those Super Bowl team quarterback situations looks like. I mean, there was no more amazing quarterback scenario than happened in San Francisco a few years ago when they first drafted Trey Lance and they ended up with Brock Purdy. So talk about that a little bit, you know, maybe what we've learned from those guys.
I mean, all four, yeah. The 49ers can teach you what to do, what to not do, I guess. You know, you look at all four teams. I mean, all four, you know, extremely aggressive when it comes to getting their quarterback, and that's one reason that they are where they are. Now, there's a lot more that goes into it, San Francisco and Detroit and Kansas City's defense. And Baltimore, of course, had they not choked, very physical, very, you know, like a, just full teams. But when it comes to the quarterback, all four are aggressive. I mean, you know, Kansas City once upon a time had a quarterback that they were happy with, not to the level of Patrick Mahomes, but Alex Smith was a good quarterback. You know, Brett Veach, who was a scout, or he's in the scouting department at the time, didn't become a general manager until later in 2017. But he's the guy that got on the table and said, this Mahomes guy is not – he's more than this quirky mechanic, you know, quirky mechanics – bad footwork guy. I mean, this is a guy we should go after. So they traded up from 27 to 10 to get him. You know, obviously the Lions, you know, did the blockbuster trade with worked out for both teams. I don't care if the Lions lost yesterday or not. Stafford going to Los Angeles. You know, the Ravens, they traded back into the first round to get Lamar Jackson. With the 32nd pick the year 2018, I believe. You know, and then the 49ers did, you know, they did something that might get a guy fired if they hadn't come and picked Purdy the next year. But, you know, they traded three number ones and a third to go up from 12 to 3 to get Trey Lance. You know, Trey Lance is history with the 49ers. He 8 games. 2-2 as a starter, and they traded him for a fourth rounder, you know, to the Cowboys during, you know, before last season. So, but they were able to do that because they, you know, I won't say it's aggressive because they didn't know that Purdy was going to be this, but they knew something that he would fit that system. So they kept, even though they had Trey Lance in his second year or heading into his second year, they still stayed active and looking for quarterbacks.
How about that?
You got to do that even in the seventh round, or you just be constantly churning that position. So, you know, the Vikings right now are not – I don't think it's going to cut it that they look for Purdy in the seventh round. I think they got to make a home run, you know, if it costs your future first-round picks, which it will, if you're looking at going into the top three.
Look at that, Mark. Look at that. Look at what Kansas City did. I mean, and this is information you sent me. They traded up from 27 to 10 to take Mahomes. It cost them a third rounder in 2017 and a first rounder in 2018. That's a steal. That's a bloody steal.
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, that's only been, you know, it's been, what, 7 years now. But, you know, teams are so aggressive that it's going to cost, you know, and granted, that's 10. That's not 3. What the 49ers had to do to move from 12 to 3 was a lot more. And obviously, you say that it cost them the 2018 number one, but it also cost them, you know, the 27 in 2017. But, you know, to me, that to go up 17 spots and then that 2018 ends up being just a mid first round, a 16th overall pick. So yeah, it's being aggressive. It feels like the Vikings need to be aggressive on that end. I don't know if it's even possible because, the top three teams, the Bears, Washington, and New England, 1, 2, 3, the Bears probably take a quarterback and they're certainly not going to trade the number one pick to inside their division. They're not going to go crazy on us and hand them that number one pick, I wouldn't think. Washington needs a quarterback. New England, I guess you could, with a new coach, you could say, well, if you give a new coach like two number ones down the road, and he might be willing to part with that as opposed to taking a quarterback himself. So it's finding the right quarterback. If you're absolutely in love with a guy, I feel they got to be aggressive. This is the year, and it might even be spending resources on both ends. Signing Kirk Cousins and doing this. The time is now. Because people are putting them in the dust, and I feel like they got to make a move to solidify that position this year and or the future.
It's not like they haven't got the message about you got to take some swings, but their swings aren't very bold. I mean, they had Kellen Mond, they had Jake Browning, they had Jaren Hall. So they have taken swings, but they're not bold swings like you need. I mean, who foresees that with Mahomes? And you always hear Aaron Rodgers complain about all the teams that passed him by and he went to 24th or whatever. Look at 10 teams or 9 teams passed up the opportunity to take Mahomes. And if he was that good and worth those three picks, how come somebody else didn't go grab him?
They didn't. There's an eye for this stuff, and the one team that's the glaring, one that ends up, that they'll have to live with forever is the Chicago Bears trading up into the second spot and taking Trubisky.
Mitch Trubisky.
That's one that you don't get out from underneath that one as a fan base or as an organization. It's having an eye for it. It's also knowing your system. It's, Brett Veach is a guy that started out as a, I did a story for Sunday's paper on where these guys all came from. And they were three of them, Brad Holmes and Brett Veach and Eric DaCosta were all guys that started out in as scouts. And DaCosta started out as a 25-year-old intern that worked under Ozzie Newsome, who built, Ozzie was a Hall of Fame tight end in Cleveland. Followed the franchise to Baltimore, put together two Super Bowl champions in Baltimore. DaCosta learned all along and had chances to go places, but he ended up, following Ozzie after Ozzie retired in 2018 or 19. These are guys that and the other one who wasn't raised in scouting and a football lifer in that regard was the John Lynch, who had a 15-year Hall of Fame playing career. So there's an eye that I think that these guys have, and that it's honed, and it's Brad Holmes is a case where he was an intern, I think, in basketball, PR intern, became a PR intern with the Rams, and then just worked his way into scouting and became where he is. 8 years as a director or whatever in with the Rams, and then becomes GM of the Lions. So
an executive of the year, right?
This year, he's done some tremendous work that the Vikings need to be aware of. They are aware of it, but Vikings got to start hitting like that too, or they just have no chance.
It is about hitting, because like you say, this guy came from PR background and learned how to, the job, and maybe learned, how to scout players and such. But you got to have an eye, and you still got to hit to do what the Lions have done, and to do what, Lynch and Ozzie Newsome and some of these other guys. So you have to hit, because look at once you do, that player will do wonderful things for you. Look at Andy Reid's career. He was forever in Philadelphia. Never, he got to a Super Bowl, but never won one. He goes to Kansas City, and he's still doing all right. He's winning games because he's a very good coach. But now, you know, with he gets Mahomes, who takes him to the NFC AFC title game 6 consecutive years, taking him to 4 Super Bowls, and he's going to be going down as one of the top 3. Or people are talking about one of the top 3 coaches of all time because he hits on this player and is smart enough to build a team around him. It's amazing what a player can do for you if you hit on him.
Well, it's also knowing how to use him. I mean, Andy Reid probably right. He's like 66, I think. He is the perfect
young man.
He's the perfect blend of old school to some degree and new school to a huge degree because he I've done stories on this talking to Brad Childress about, you know, how Andy conducts a week and how open he is to, you know, other people's ideas, including the players. And the players, you know, Chiefs will throw out some of those goofy plays. Those are goofy plays that the players will come up with. Andy Reid doesn't shut it down. And Andy Reid looks at it, thinks about it. And if he likes it or if he thinks it'll work, yeah, go ahead. Let's try it. You know, like they had the ring around the rosy thing they did one time where against the Raiders, and the Raiders are looking at what's going on here. And then they scored a touchdown, but I think if someone was offside or something,
yeah.
You know, just things like that. So, and the rumor that's going around, well, you know, Andy Reid may walk away this year if he wins the Super Bowl and he'll hand the team to Bill Belichick. I mean, I guess nothing would surprise me in this league, but that would really surprise me that someone would walk away from Patrick Mahomes in his prime and give him to Bill Belichick. Why would you? I mean, Brad Childress and I've had this conversation, and Brad obviously is very close to Andy, and he was like, I, you know, as long as he's got this thing going, why would he? I don't think Andy will retire, and he doesn't know for sure because, you know, nobody knows anything for sure about someone else. But Andy Reid, yeah, this could be, you know, Andy Reid could win this one. Andy Reid could become the first one to win 3 in a row next year. We got to remember this. We treated this entire Kansas City season like this was their worst season of the Patrick Mahomes era.
Yes.
And it was like, oh my God, they, you know, they lost this game. They lost on Christmas Day to the Raiders. You know, they have to go on the road. You know, the offense is vulnerable. Well, on the flip side, we saw what their experience and what their you know, having, you know, been there, done that mentality did for them on Sunday. Whereas the, you know, Ravens were the best team all league. They were beating winning teams, playoff teams by 14 points, 20 points more. But when they got in that moment, they wilted at home. I mean, it was shocking to see the Baltimore Ravens wilt the way they did.
You know, if they haven't won this Super Bowl yet this year, it's a good chance that they will, and we'll talk about that later. But if Andy Reid wants to win a third one in a row, he better keep Mr. Taylor Smith on his team next year. I don't know how much longer that guy's going to play either, because that guy's phenomenal, Travis Kelce. You know, and he's you know, he didn't have the greatest season, but boy, he's having a killer playoff. So it's he's probably still got some tread left on the tire. But who, you know, why would you want to? If what I'd want to do if I was him, it's marry that gal in the off season. Then you don't have to ever earn another dime. But you know, you brought up Bill Belichick, and I want to say something. I saw just before I came on here, someone was rumoring that Belichick would be a great fit for the Vikings in 2025 after the Kevin O'Connell era ends. Wow. And I'm just going, it's amazing the speculation you have out there. I mean, but the question I want to ask you is, obviously the Atlanta Falcons interviewed him and he interviewed with them, and they ended up hiring Raheem Morris. Belichick is just not on the radar right now. Are people just really don't want to tie into somebody that may just be around a couple of years to get that record and that's it? Or, I mean, what do you think is going on there?
You know, I think what happened in Atlanta was, you know, Atlanta has, you know, a structure where the president has been there forever. And he, you know, when you hire Bill Belichick, it's Bill Belichick. It's nobody else is going to, he's not going to answer to anybody else. He'll talk to the owner and he'll say, hey, I'll see you on game day, you know. This is my team. I'm taking over. This is my team. In the Atlanta Falcons, once they, I believe he interviewed with the owner first, and then he interviewed with, you know, the president and all those guys. And I think that they decided that we're not going to give our team to them for, you know, 2 or 3 years, whatever it's going to be. So, and no, I don't think anyone else was going to do that. You know, the one thing that sort of that's been thrown around is common sense. It would see, you know, a full circle type of deal where, you know, if Brian Daboll ends up in as a Giants coach, if he ends up having another year like this, he'd be out. Belichick would, you know, go to the Giants.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, I think he'll be back in it, you know, but boy, he's 71 and it's going to be hard to, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, it very well could not happen, you know, going forward. We don't, you know, because it'd have to be the right fit for him. It'd have to be the right fit for someone else. He's not going to go in and rebuild a team from scratch. So yeah, I don't feel like we've seen his last coaching game, but we very well could have.
Yeah, be amazing. Back to the quarterbacks just a little bit. There are some do's and don'ts there. I mean, you know, it's a gamble, you know, if you're going to spend a lot of capital. And you're saying the Vikings, you know, not they could or maybe should sign Kirk and trade up. I'm in somewhat agreement with that. But I think, you know, I don't know that they have the draft capital to do all that. I mean, I feel like they got to let Kirk go, get a compensatory for him signing with somebody else, and then use some of that. But I'm ready to take a down year. I saw it, Charlie Walters in the St. Paul paper was saying that it's going to be around $90 million to keep him for 2 years.
Well, you know,
buzz going around right now. If that's true,
No, but I'm saying is like you and I don't have to pay that. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
it's all about the cap. It's all about the cap number for me. It's you know I don't have $90 million laying around. It'd be a lot for you to have to pay. So as long as the Wills can pay it, and what you're trying to do, I feel, is you are trying to get a quarterback in place. And at some point, you are going to have to absorb some dead money on Kirk. And right now, if he walks away, and you don't, and he's bye bye Kirk. He still costs $29 million. Yeah. So to me, like when Aaron Rodgers, when they finally couldn't take any more of Aaron Rodgers' crap in Green Bay, it's like, you know, God, we love you. You're a legend. And you could play here another 5 years if you just weren't such a hard guy to, you know, pacify. So he breaks away. Well, they had, you know, Jordan Love there. And Jordan Love was only probably – I want to say $10 million on the cap, but maybe not even that much.
I don't think it is. Yeah.
Because that might be what his average was, but it's
right.
So probably down low. So Aaron Rodgers cost them $40 million against their cap. The only reason they could absorb that and win 9 games is because they had a quarterback in place.
Yeah.
So I'm far from being a cap guy or a GM, but I'm looking at it and thinking, well, I would rather have Kirk and have the number, his cap number, you know, spread the money out again, but I would only want to do that is if I would hit a home run with a quarterback now, get him ready for 1 or 2 years from down the road and say, you know, when he's ready to take over, you're going to have to take Kirk's money, but you'll have your quarterback.
Don't you have to make that decision on Kirk before you get to the draft, right? Or do you think they can drag that out, you know, pass the draft, then say, okay, we got a quarterback of the future. Let's get him in here and sign him for a couple of years, and then we'll just.
No, I think because the draft is in, you know, free agency starts in February. You got to get Kirk situated, and then you, yeah, I mean, yeah. Kirk would come first. But I don't believe this, you know, that, I mean, just every single year, it's always, there's a lot of work, you know, worst to first. You look at the two teams, you know, granted, it's a regular season game, 49ers were banged up. But, you know, the Vikings beat the 49ers in regular season. The Vikings, I think, lost to the Chiefs by 7 and probably, you know, outplayed them. But they had their traditional opening play turnover that became a touchdown. And then they played them, you know, outplayed them, I think. So I just don't, you know, the days of, well, you know, we just got to walk, you know, we just got to take our lumps for 5 years and come back strong. You don't have to. I mean, the league is so tightly knit when it comes to the ability to get to the playoffs. You don't have to be you know, the Vikings are a long way from being a number one seed, I would think, but they're not a long way from being the, what the Packers were this year. And the Packers went and beat the Cowboys and then gave the 49ers all they could handle the next week. So yeah. I feel like they can be, you know, I don't, people like to, now it's the new thing now is, I guess maybe the Wilfs started, you know, with their super competitive quote. And, you know, people look at rebuilds as, well, it's either a teardown and we're terrible for 10 years or 5 years, or it's a competitive
rebuild.
To me, every rebuild is complete, is different. It's its own case. And I feel like they, you know, I don't know if they can do it or not, if they can do both those things. But I just keep looking at the fact that they need a quarterback for the future. And if they just say goodbye to Kirk, Kirk's going to cost you more than if you, you know, gave him some money and you kicked it down the road.
Yeah, that dead money cap hit is important. It's good that you keep bringing that up. Because I got to remember that's important. You know, if we learned anything this year, we learned, you know, from the Packers and the Chiefs, it's not how you start the year, it's how you finish it. If you get hot during the playoffs, the Chiefs won enough games to get in there, but they had to go on the road for two games, and they look like they're every bit as good as they were in any of their other years the last couple weeks here. So look out for them. Anyway, let's take a quick break and come back and talk some more NFL and Vikings with Mark Craig, our Tribune on Vikings Territory Breakdown podcast. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Mark, each week here in the offseason, we've been kind of doing a position review for the Vikings, kind of to take a look at what they got going, what they need to do, and good God, where it's going to lead for this team. Looking at wide receivers this week, and you know that the big headline, of course, of any discussion of wide receivers in the Vikings is Justin Jefferson. We saw what we were without him, and it's just not as fun to watch. So I don't care what it's going to be. You got to get that man back on this roster, just because even in losing football, Justin Jefferson is a treat to watch. And I was thinking about it last night. You know, when you compare him to Randy Moss, two of the top three Vikings receivers of all time, Chris Carter in there, of course. But Moss did all his stuff by running past people. You know, he runs past him, sticks up his arm, or he's making, you know, as they say, you get mossed by him. He makes up and make high points the ball, makes incredible catches in the end zone. And that's where he did most of his damage, whereas Jefferson catches it everywhere on the field, across the middle, on the sidelines, way out of his range, you know, and not as many touchdowns over the top. You know, it's interesting that there's a contrast in style, I'm thinking, without doing a lot of research, but just what I know from highlights and stuff. They're really kind of different receivers, but they're both going to be quite incredible when all is said and done.
Yeah, I think that's underappreciating Randy's ball skills as well. I mean, maybe there weren't as many. If you're thinking their highlights, might be because Randy ran by everybody. There's never been anybody in the league that's had the combination of Randy's, his length, his size, and his speed. I mean, I don't believe it's ever happened, and other than him. And but there were still times one of the greatest catches I ever saw him make was, it was maybe a 2 yard pass. Culpepper turned and threw a bullet, and it didn't, it was supposed to be like a maybe, they really didn't have that many bubble screens back then, but like a bullet that was like throwing like a rocket. And Randy just reached up as he's going out of bounds and caught the nose of the ball with his fingers, and he's holding it like an ice cream cone. It's like, how does that happen? But yeah, getting back to Jefferson. Not only is he a treat to watch, but he makes his quarterback better. He makes should make his running game better. They got to invest in a little more power up front in the offensive line for that to help.
Yeah, did you see any decent running games this weekend, Mark?
yeah. I mean, I think I did. You know, I don't think it's trolling. It's just pointing out like deficiencies. It's, you know, in the first 24 minutes of the game, the Lions had three rushing touchdowns. The Vikings had seven rushing touchdowns, a franchise low for a non-strike year, in 17 games. It's like, and they had 158 yards rushing in the first half.
And the coach wanted to emphasize running game this year.
Well, they just that's who they are. You can say, well, you got a scheme, or it's not scheme. It's just the ability to line up and have a Frank Reg now and a Panay Sewell and Taylor Decker, and they were actually did have their backup left guard, and he looked as good as the other guys. So, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's Justin Jefferson makes everyone better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, and here's another case where, yeah, you're going to end up giving him a lot of money, but when you're talking about the cap, I think right now, if he doesn't get an extension, it would be worse financially for the Vikings this year, because I think it's 19, $20 million, whatever. I think what they would extend him, that would probably bring the cap number down, I would think.
Yep.
And you don't have to worry. I don't think you have to worry about him if you extend it out, however many years, about him, being there. One thing he does need to do, it can't have happen again. He's a great player. He is trending, toward Canton, Ohio. But you can't miss seven games. You can't have another season where you miss seven games, because then that really, you got to be there. And it's not his fault or anything. And he did say, maybe do some training in the offseason to help prevent stuff like that. I still think that it would have been six games if the Bears hadn't been before a bye week.
I don't know if you can say that, Mark. I was going to the Timberwolves game the other night, Cat's 62-point game, and I had to hustle across the street to get out of from traffic, and I tweaked my hammy on the way across, and almost didn't make it to the other side, and I'm still in pain here. So these things take a while to heal. I'm just saying.
Well, I think it probably would take you a while. It might take a little bit longer than Justin. But yeah, I'm just saying, whether it's his fault or it's not, nothing was his fault. But I'm saying whether, he was out seven because they were being too careful, whether he was being too careful or the team was being too, doesn't matter. You just, in order to be that caliber Hall of Fame type player, you can't have another season where he's out seven games.
No, you're exactly
even
right.
Even though they were actually, the irony, the strange thing about this whole, he makes everyone better, but their best stretch was when he wasn't on the field, which is really bizarre.
Yeah, think about that in terms of the season, and you just, all you can do is scratch your head. I mean, he had great opening games of the year with Cousins. Then he goes down first. Yeah. And Cousins there to beat the San Francisco 49ers without him, by the way. And, then he comes back, and in between there, they're losing ball. They're winning ball games when he's not on the field. I don't know. I don't know how you figure that out.
I don't think there's any correlation. There's no correlation. When it comes contract time, I don't think the Vikings are going to point out, hey, without you, we were 5-7. With you, we were 2-2 and whatever. I don't know.
I think I would smile his brand new pearly teeth white that he got, he had braces on or whatever, and say, yeah, that's not gonna wash in these negotiations. What is the Sport Track? You said has his new production's new deal at 2 years. No, this is KJ Osborne.
Yeah,
who could be the odd man out here, because like you say, they are gonna give all the money to Justin Jefferson, and KJ Osborne's new deal projects out at 2 years, $15 million, 7.5 on the cap. Boy, oh boy. It sounds like a nice deal, but I don't know if he's going to get that in Minnesota. What do you think?
Well, you can try and give Justin that contract to see if he'll sign that for a hometown discount. But
yeah, bring up those losses while he was, or those wins while he was on the bench. Yeah.
Yeah. On that spot rec, or that site is fun to go and first of all, see who, all free agents that are available and what their potential market value is. KJ took a step back this year. It was a contract year for him. Could have been a year where, he'd be looking at a lot more than that, maybe. I just don't know where that fits. I still trust him as a good player, a good number three. Would like to see him back. But, man, they got so many guys to try and that they have to take care of, or they got a pursuit like Daniil. Who knows if Daniil truly wants to come back. If I'm Daniil, you know, it might, you know, getting, you know, toward 30 and it'd be like, yeah, I want to play on a win. I want to play on a team that I know I'm still going to be playing right now. But they got to make a run at him. So there's a lot of things they got to do. So I don't know if 7.5 on the cap for a KJ, that seems like an awful lot right now to me.
Yeah, you got Jordan Addison on a rookie contract. And so you probably would save money there by, you know, you can't really pay KJ, who's your third receiver, but he didn't produce that much. So I don't know that you can give him that much. You know, yeah. Go ahead.
And the other thing, KJ is that sort of like Thielen, you know, Thielen was a financial decision on the Vikings as well. But Thielen also wanted to go somewhere and where he was, you know, being used more. He got his wish, but he only got two wins. You know, because at that point last year, I was, you know, we were talking about him. It was another dead cap money situation. Like, man, you know, he's going to be, you know, $19 million, I think, with dead cap for him. It was pretty big. It's like, well, maybe there's a way of, like, still having him and you know, bringing the cap down. But they probably did the right thing with him and trying to move on. But he got his wish to get a lot of catches, but it wasn't a very successful year team-wise for him.
You know, I agree. As much as I liked Adam and him having a MSU, my daughter went to the school there. My brother did. I'm from Mankato. I loved it and hated to see him go. You got to make those decisions. I mean, look at the three teams in the division that the Vikings are battling. They're all younger. And so you got to hit on your draft picks and build them up and catch them at their time when they're maybe still on a rookie contract and just coming into their own and making your team. And then maybe they get their second contract by the end of that, you're probably looking for them to move on because their skills are diminishing and there's more young players coming up. I think that's how you got to play this league and not be so in love with your longtime contributors who are a little long in the tooth, and the Vikings certainly have some of those.
Yeah, and I'd say with Jefferson, now being young, being, you know, best receiver and all this, but what also makes him a little – more you know, attractive to the Vikings or to a team is that, you know, he doesn't have a lot of these that typically, not all of them, but typically receivers have, and this inability to keep him happy. You know, like Stephon Diggs, if it wasn't for his personality, would probably still be with the Vikings.
Yeah.
You know, Justin Jefferson showed none of that during his contract situation. Didn't hold in. Didn't alter how he played. I mean, you know, he played, you know, he went into this season expecting to become the highest paid receiver in the history of the NFL. He played the entire season with an average per year payment that was below Jordan Addison. So wow. Technically, Justin Jefferson was the second highest paid receiver on the, or I don't know what KJ made, but, you know, was not, you know, so that anywhere else, any other, a lot of other receivers, that doesn't happen because they just cause such a big stink. So you have that to go on for you with him as well. Jordan Addison, you know, it's hard to read because he's a rookie. He was quiet, but he put up some good numbers. He had 10, I believe, 10 touchdowns. You might be a few years from, you know, dealing with him and,
yeah,
you know, I want the ball more. I want this. I want that. You know, so, but for now, he's very affordable. He's very good. So you got two. Who's going to be that third guy? Who's going to be that fourth guy?
Mark, just a question about Jefferson. Is it smarter to lock him up now than does he have one more year on his contract?
One of the reasons it didn't you know, actually happen last year is he still had 2 years. Now he's got 1 year. He's not going to – I mean, I would feel safe in saying he's not going to step on the field unless that's extended. And I feel like, you know, the Vikings make that because I'm pretty sure, and it's safe in saying this, that it brings the cap number down because they, you know, that's the fifth year on his contract, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he counts as like, I believe, $19 or $20 million against the cap. It's going to happen. It's got to happen this year.
Okay. Brandon Powell's a free agent. He produced when given the opportunity, not every time, but he made some big, tough catches for a small guy out there, especially on big third downs and such when A lot of the other guys recovered. What do you think about him? And I know that KOC likes him. He was with him in Los Angeles, I believe.
What I wouldn't do with him is have him do the tush push on back to back plays in a big game in Cincinnati late in the year. I would not do that. But I like him as an affordable. I like him as a, you know, he's also a good locker room guy. He's not great, but he's a decent punt returner. So some stability there, maybe. He's good to use occasionally as a receiver. I think he had to be used probably more than they would like, but he has some ability there. I liked him better than Jalen Reagor. You know, whenever they were battling, I'm like, I'd take this guy over Reagor any day. But they were similar type players. So, you know, I can't see that he'll cost you much. And I think that he wants some stability, want to come back to the same team because he's been everywhere. He's bounced around. I think there's a place for him on the team, but it's not like, you know, I don't think it's as your fourth receiver or maybe it's your fifth receiver.
After that, there's names like Jalen Naylor, Lucky Jackson, N'Keal Harry. Anybody there gonna bust out and make a name for themselves on this team to stick, or are they just gonna be in and off the reserve and onto the lineup when needed when you have injured players? I don't know. That's what we saw from them this year.
Yeah, and Tristan Jackson is a guy, and Thayer Thomas, who they tried to make a punt returner in the preseason, damn near killed the guy. I never seen anybody get blown up more on trying to return punts. But yeah, they're you know, Malik Knowles, Jalen Baldwin was a guy they brought in. I think is a practice squad guy. They're you know, Lucky Jackson was the guy that was the XFL star last year. All guys with potential, and then N'Keal Harry. It hasn't. You know, people keep thinking, you know, hey, he was the number one pick of the Patriots, and but that's been a long time now, and I don't see him. First of all, it just doesn't look like he's anywhere near fast enough to be a first round pick, obviously. But, you know, I don't think he's ever going to develop into a guy. So if you're holding out hope for that, and N'Keal Harry was a guy who was number one pick at one point, you know, you can wish all you want, but I don't think that's going to happen. The rest of them are guys that they're affordable. You know, Jalen Naylor, I think he only caught like 3 balls for 30 yards this year. He was the one that kind of played toward the end of his rookie year and had a 100-yard game or something.
Yeah.
Like one game at the end of the year. Potential. You know, everybody else is potential, but it's if you find someone else that catches your eye that might fit the system better, who's cheap and young, that's what you go for. You turn in the bottom of the roster.
Sign Justin Jefferson. Say goodbye to KJ. Enjoy Addison while you can. Maybe bring in Powell and the rest just so they don't take a wide receiver in the first round. That's all I care about. Just don't do that this year.
Yeah, I don't think they will, but might be taking, you know, if they can't get a quarterback, they might have to take because if quarterbacks go three or say three go for sure, people are saying might be the getting one of the top edge rushers because they may not have anybody.
Whew, big off season. Glad it's not my job. It's only my job to comment on it. So we'll take a break and come back and comment on it some more. So come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, let's talk a little playoffs. You know, it was two very interesting games yesterday. And, you know, fun to watch. It's always a big Sunday watching these divisional or sorry conference championships. But they did not disappoint for drama. That what they maybe lacked in some decent football. They didn't in drama. And first of all, I thought Baltimore had a masterclass in how to blow a conference title game. They're undisciplined. With Zay Flowers was good when he made his touchdowns. Bad when he got up and taunted a play on a big catch, and worse when he fumbled, and which would have helped them get in. They were impatient. I thought, what's his name, quarterback Lamar Jackson, throwing into triple coverage, probably should have got In the end zone, probably should have got a interference call in there, but didn't get it. Instead, got picked and kept him out of the end zone there, where they could have won the game. And they were just an inexperienced. Mahomes just, you know, got a lead and relied on his defense and outlasted him and never let him got near the end zone again. So, what did you think of that game? Pretty exciting and just another disappointment for Baltimore and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I think Travis Kelce might have said it best. He goes, the Chiefs are still the Chiefs, and I think we all forgot that. I mean, Chiefs were underdogs, and for legitimate reasons. They were in Baltimore. Baltimore was the best team in the league this year. But, you know, this is where the intangibles come in, the fact that the Chiefs, you know, have been to six straight of these things. I don't care if it's home or away, six straight conference championship games, three of the last four Super Bowls. What is it now? Four of the last six or whatever. Yeah. They just weren't ruffled by anything. And they came out, and what the Chiefs have introduced to their to what they weren't maybe before was, yeah, the offense didn't have, you know, Kelce. I voted for Kelce for first team All Pro. I don't know if he was second, or I don't know if he made first or second. It was, but I know Kittle had first. I was like, you know, even if it was kind of a down year for him, he's the reason that, you know, that they had what they had and they got 11 wins out of it. And a bad year was 11 wins.
Yeah, he got 10 receptions, and their receivers aren't getting any.
He had 11 catches yesterday on 11 targets, converting third downs, converting fourth downs, a touchdown. What the Chiefs came out and did to Baltimore's defense in those first two drives, I don't think I've ever seen, especially most of Baltimore's history after they left Cleveland. It's been power. They're a powerful team built on defense and running the ball. And the Chiefs, you know, just drove them down the field twice, got that 14-7 lead. And then Baltimore, you know, another thing was out of character. A lot of things were out of character for them. Undisciplined, there was five personal fouls. You know, Zay Flowers, you mentioned that one. Van Noy going up and headbutting Kelce. Yep. I mean, it's like, what in the world is going on here with that, you know, with how they acted? And then they had three turnovers. Chiefs didn't have any. Lamar Jackson, you know, people say, oh, he's been knocked about. He can't win in the postseason. This isn't going to help his case. They might cry that they didn't get a pass interference. But what are you doing throwing it into the end zone when there's – I don't even know how he saw his guy because there were three guys in front of him. How did you even know he was there? Because he was triple covered. And then, you know, going into the Zay Flowers, who's a fantastic player, by the way, but
yeah,
into the end zone and, you know, fumbling as he, you know, just everything kind of added up for him. But Lamar Jackson, and I also want to know, this was by far the best running team in the league, in part because Jackson runs so much, but yep, they didn't run the ball. And, you know, meanwhile, Kansas City has a certain toughness to them now with their, with Pacheco, a seventh round pick who is not far from where Purdy was taken. You know,
boy, would I like that guy on the Vikings team.
Pacheco. Yeah, he's just it seems like the whole year has been writing about the draft and who they could have had and they didn't take. And it's hindsight for me, but I'm not, you know, some of these, like Kyle Hamilton taking him, you know, not taking him, and two spots later he gets taken by Baltimore. That's not, to me, that's not hindsight. That's, you should have known, and the whole world knew Kyle Hamilton was a guy that if he falls that far, you take him, and they didn't do it. But, you know, Kansas City's now got the best defense that Mahomes has ever had. You know, so
how can you pick against them? I mean, you know, when you see the way San Francisco plays so up and down and uneven, how can a person not think with that defense and that quarterback that they're not going to win this flipping game?
Well, yeah, both of us picked Baltimore.
Yeah,
I felt that it would, and my feeling was they would play a little more like Baltimore. They wouldn't have five personal fouls. They wouldn't turn the ball over three times. They wouldn't, you know, that they would run the ball. They would
pressure
Lamar Jackson, you know, wilted in on the big stage with them, whereas Patrick Mahomes is, you know, does what he does.
Been there, done that. Yeah, I mean, it pressure and panic. These games do, you know, as soon as things go turning the wrong way against you, it seems like you're all of a sudden treading, going uphill. The tidal wave's coming at you, and you can't fight through it. Well, we kind of saw that in the other game, didn't we? A little pressure getting to the Lions. Yes, the second game was the Lions and the 49ers, and the Lions jump out to a 17-point halftime lead. It looked over. They looked dominant. The 49ers looked like they looked against the Vikings earlier this year. They just didn't have anything. They couldn't put it together. And there were so many crazy games and or plays in that game. You know, and I guess let's just talk about the Lions first before we talk about this the 49ers comeback in the second half, because that was crazy in itself. But what did you think of the Lions, at least in the first half, until they started imploding in the second?
It was everything that, you know, I feel like the Lions were made fun of for, you know, around draft time, when Campbell was introduced, you know, coming in preaching toughness and football and all this old school, you know, that now people now just want to talk about schemes and offense, fancy passes and stuff like that. Well, they came in saying, we're going to line up, and you may know we're going to run, but we're going to run over you.
God.
And that's what they did. And they got two backs. They got a, you know, outstanding tight end. But that offensive line, I mean, it was just everything about why Detroit was there was on display. I mean, it was just Detroit, you know, saying, I don't care where this game is. You know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to be powerful. And, you know, Jared Goff can't run faster than you or me. But when you protect him, he can throw anywhere on the field. And so he's well protected. And you were texting, you were doing my Twitter jinx when you want something to maybe change, you know, you just, it's over. And then it naturally goes 180 the other direction. And that's exactly when it started. When we were exchanging on that, it was about the time where the deep ball hits the Lions defender in the face and bounces up in the air, and Ayuk catches it inside the five, and I'm like, and then they score a touchdown right after that. I'm like, this isn't over.
Yeah, and then the next series is a fumble that they recover the first play. You know, I read something this morning that about that freak play with Ayuk. The refs were ready to call pass interference on the Lions defender anyway, because he did push him before it did hit him in the face. But then they didn't call it when he caught the pass. And anyway, I mean, I don't know if that's just somebody speculating. I should have verified that more. But it sounded like that's what they were thinking, because it was pass interference regardless. But talk about a freak lucky play. It bounces right back up to his hands in stride, and he's able to
get
down there. But that. So anyway, I didn't, you know, it all of a sudden to me, it looked like NFC North championship game football. All of a sudden, the time turned and you're slogging through molasses uphill, and there's just no way to come back. Now, they did hang in there and score a little bit more, but I guess they went from 24 at halftime to they ended up, they got another touchdown. But so you give them credit for that, but – oh, you mentioned about Goff. Yeah, when they did get to him, he started making mistakes too, and it just one thing after another.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vikings fans have seen that movie a few times over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they've also been on the other side of, you know, like when they played the Colts and it was 33-0 at halftime or whatever. Yeah. You know, so it had that feeling of like, man, when everything's going right, you're just like, wow. We always joke, yeah, it's going to be a tough loss. And sure enough, that's what it was. And, you know, Dan Campbell, I love his aggressiveness, but I think he just went into hyperspace when it came to being aggressive. It's like,
how do you not kick that field goal lately? Well,
two times, you know, in the second half where it's like, man, maybe just take the field goal. One was, I think their first possession of the second half, they decided to go for it. And they get stopped. And then, it's like, maybe 3 points there would have been nice, a 20-point lead.
Yep.
Then comes the freak play. Then comes the turnover. And then there was 8 minutes where that team, top to bottom, from the head coach, I think, all the way down, was in sheer panic mode. I mean, there was the pressure and the way they were pressing, I felt, just permeated through the entire team. It was – you know, there was one where they had a chance to kind of stabilize the situation. And I think I was tweeting that, you know, they need 53 paper bags to breathe into right now because it's, what's going on? And the receiver, it's a third
down. St. Brown.
No, he's not the one.
Reynolds.
Yeah, Reynolds. Reynolds is across the middle. It's a chance. You know, Jared Goff hits him in stride. It's a chance to, like, just take a breath and
stop the bleeding.
And he drops the ball, and it's 3-0. Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, this is going to happen. They're going to – and then once you get the 49ers a jolt, you know, then they become – you know, there's so much power in that team as well. And McCaffrey, when he's 100% healthy or near 100%, there's nobody better at just, you know, like, you know, grinding and just running, you know, just doing everything you need to do to win. And then after that, it was like, you know, that 8-minute window. And then it felt like they were behind by 10 points.
The second field goal, though, yeah. you, how do you not take that? You're right down there. Get yourself what that gives them, you know, that ties the game.
Yeah.
And puts pressure back on San Francisco. But instead, they get this gift right there, and they just march right up the field and put a touchdown and make it a 10-point lead and ball game over.
Well, a 10-point lead with 3 minutes left. It was –
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a 48-yard field goal, but I feel like, you know, the guy, you know, that's makeable. I don't know. This is who he is. And –
Someone called him this morning. He's Mike Tice with better PR.
Well, Mike Tice with better players.
Yeah, that's true too.
You know, I mean, obviously Tice had, you know, Randy and some really good players, but it's kind of, I mean, before halftime, whenever he did kick the field goal, they were like, well, you know, Greg Olsen, who does a great job, by the way, I think he would say, you know, most coaches we wouldn't even be thinking about this, but he might go for it. And you know, when it was fourth down and no time left, basically. But I think he just went a little too far. And it was like, wow, you know, you want to be aggressive and everything. But and then that fourth and three at the, you know, with 10 minutes left or whatever it was, you know, it's just seemed like it was too much of a prayer type play, you know, winging a prayer, you know. It's like, you know, it should have been something a little better. But they did put pressure on Goff. Got him out of there. And there was a guy open on the backside, but by then, you know, Goff couldn't see him because he's running for his life.
What do you think about the physicality of these two teams? I mean, actually, maybe these four teams, they're all a step – they're all this far over ahead of the Vikings as far as being a physical team. Because, you know, when you really look at it, even if the Vikings would have made the playoffs, they'd have got the snot kicked out of them because the Lions are more physical, the – Niners are more physical. Certainly the Chiefs in the other league, they got a great defense now, and the Ravens are the Ravens. To get to this level, you really got to get a little of that Dan Campbell kneecap.
I've been saying that for
– Yes, you have. Say it again.
For a while. And you know, that's why when you talk about, you know, it's so much, but, you know, KOC and his play calling or this or that, it's like, you know – O'Connell couldn't run the ball like that because he doesn't have the ability to. He doesn't have the interior strength of the offensive line. And I don't know where, you know, all I know is that I don't think they're going to get to where they need to go until they have an offensive line like San Francisco has, like especially like Detroit has. You know, Kansas City gets away with maybe not as good an offensive line because of, you know, the magician that they got behind them.
Yeah.
So Peyton Manning never had. Yeah, I wouldn't say Peyton Manning had great offensive lines. He just and wasn't mobile, but he just knew how to, you know, he knew everything about how that could possibly happen to him. Same with Tom Brady, you know, just being able to identify and get the ball out and all that stuff. But, you know, especially if Kirk's still here going forward, you just need to better than what you got. I mean, they're not like they were a few years ago because they do have some talent at tackle. But I just feel like, man, they're not powerful enough. And that's gotta be a point. If you can get some guys and, I mean, you went out and you got Marcus Davenport for $13 million for 1 year. Maybe there's a guard somewhere that, you know, don't get a guard like that, but get someone, spend that kind of money and get something inside.
So you think more, you know, I mean, when we start talking about the other deficiencies on this roster, all of a sudden I can't sanction trading a boatload of their draft capital for a quarterback yet, because they're, you know, if you get a young quarterback and you throw him behind an offensive line without a running game, and all they got is a couple decent receivers down there that you can double, I mean, you're probably going to break that player too. So, you know, wouldn't you say maybe a lineman at number 11 is pretty gall darn good if you can't trade up and get your,
yeah, I don't know if there's a tackle there that could play guard. That seems deflating at this point, or where they kind of are.
Sure. Yes, it does.
With what they could need defensively. I think the draft capital to get, if going to three is what you need to do, first of all, you got to New England has to be convinced that they have a quarterback and there's not a third guy that they want. Because I could see quarterback going 1, 2, 3 based on all the mocks and what people are saying about those three quarterbacks. And there'll probably be another quarterback that surfaces. I saw one was projected to go in 1920, the Bo Nix. I think he's played 3 or 4 different places in college. He might be 40 right. years old for all I know.
A portal boy.
The way the college football goes. I think the draft capital that we're talking about, in order to make a huge move, is you're looking at next year. You're looking at a 1 next year and maybe a 1 after that. Do they do that? The Vikings traditionally have not done stuff like that. If you're convinced that let's just say Drake May or whatever that, North Carolina, I think.
Yeah, that's the name, yeah.
Hopefully you don't want to join the Bears in taking a top 3 flyer on a North Carolina quarterback, but and have it turn out that way. But if it's a guy you fell in love with and they said, hey, you know what, it's going to cost you, your 1 this year, obviously your 11 this year, and maybe 2 1s.
Oh my God, they can't do that.
I'm just saying though, the league has gotten so aggressive. Do the Vikings do it? I don't. Maybe.
I think Quasey does, but I think Kevin O'Connell comes running across, diving across the table, tackling him before he makes
it. I don't know about that. That's a quarterback that he feels that he can build around. Because your teams are not only they're more aggressive than ever on the field, they're more aggressive than ever off the field when it comes to trade and draft picks and future capital and stuff. I don't know. Not knowing. What they think about the quarterback, or actually knowing what the quarterback's, what their potential is. If you can identify a guy, like say you have somebody you completely trust. I don't know if the Vikings, first of all, I don't know if the Vikings have this in their front office. A guy who says, okay, that the Patrick Mahomes scenario where, Brett Veach goes, hey, this is the guy, and just keeps harping on it. They bring him in and they're looking at him and they're going, this might work, and then he sits for a year. We forget that Patrick Mahomes sat for a year, just played one game at the end when they were arresting starters. I just feel like this is the year where they need to – there are any bold moves that need to be made this year.
Oh, God. Well, on that foreboding note, we'll have to let it go. We'll be back next week to talk about – set up this this battle of the Titans in the Super Bowl, and talk more about the Vikings and speculate more of what they're going to do. It's can't end this season soon enough so they can get to it. We too bad we ran out of time here. We could have previewed the Pro Bowl, but that's okay. All that stuff. But
someone's going to get hurt playing football. It's just a matter of time, and then
it is. But what can you do? What can you do? I actually enjoyed what they were doing last year when these guys were flopping around making fantastic catches and stuff. I enjoyed it rather than watching the fake football game where they just kind of act like they're playing, So
Justin Jefferson, do they play a flag football game?
They did last year, yeah. And the Manning brothers are the coaches of the two teams, which makes it fun,
I think Justin Jefferson should hold in. He should do a hold in on the flag football game. I would not put him on the field.
I totally endorse that. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mike Walden, producing. Thanks, Joe Johnson, for putting us here. And thanks to y'all for checking us out. Please do so again next week and throughout the offseason. We'll be here for you. So until that time, see you next week, and skull.
Skull.